This is the Dave Ellis Leadership Telecourse, and this is the first one of three calls, and the focus on this call is improving relationships. The next time we meet, in 2 weeks from tonight, the focus will be on improving your own motivation and the motivation of the people around you, the people that you lead. And then on the third call, we're going to focus on how you as a leader can set up a time management system and a task management system that really works for you. I'm recording this call for the people that have signed up that aren't able to attend. I'm also recording it so that you can listen to it again. Tomorrow I'll send you all directions for how to subscribe to the podcast that has this call recorded on it. Now, if you don't have iTunes on your computer, you can download iTunes for free, whether you have an Apple computer or a PC. And then you can just subscribe to this Telecourse podcast, and either from your computer you can listen to it, or you can listen to it if you have an iPod or any other kind of a portable MP3 player. Thanks for joining me. I really love to talk about leadership because I believe that you are all leaders. Now, some of you have that role of leader. You've been given that title, that designation. And some of you have not been given that formal title, but what you have been given is something more important, which is a desire. It's a desire to have something so badly that you're willing to lead other people into that desire. That's what I think a leader is. A leader is someone who wants something so much that he or she is willing to say, come on, folks, want this with me, and let's work together to create it. Let's work together to put our time and energy and even our money into capturing this dream that we now have together. Now, I think some people aren't leaders, they're managers, and then they try and get people to do something without ever, first of all, getting them to want it like the leader wants it. Then there's other people who have been given the role of leader but really haven't embraced it because they don't want what they're trying to lead others to get. They just took the job. So that's a little bit about why I love to talk about leadership, and that's what we're going to do on this call. It's not just me talking, it's you talking. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, if you're listening to this live and you want to ask a question or make a comment or share an observation, just hit *61 on your phone. On my computer screen in front of me, I have a list of all the people that are on the call. A couple of you have just joined in the last moment. But when on that list, if you hit *61, a little hand pops up next to your phone number. So please, if you'd like to speak, just hit that number. Now, if you type *61 and then you decide, no, I guess I don't want to say anything, just hit *61 again and your hand will go down. When I call on you, I'll just take you off a mute, and in your ear only, you will hear the system say you are now off mute. And as soon as you hear that, please just say your name and where you're calling from so we can get a sense of the real geographic diversity of this call. We have people on this call from all across the United States and Canada. And then after you say your name and where you're calling from, just make your comment. We'll talk a bit, and then I'll put you back on mute. For this call, please have a paper and pencil or pen ready, because I'm going to ask you several times in the next 54 minutes to write. And the reason I want you to write is so that these ideas and techniques about leadership don't just stay in your head, but rather they go from your head to your heart and to your action. And it's more likely that these ideas will go into action if you write them, not just think them. I mean, thinking something, yeah, that's good, and writing it makes it much more likely that it'll go into action. So please have paper and something to write with. I'll ask you to not only write down what you're going to put into action, but I also want you to write down answers to questions that I'll ask so that you can start to think creatively about leadership. Really think in ways that you've not thought about leadership. Now, for that reason, I want you to give us your undivided attention. And when I say us, I mean not just when I speak, but when your colleagues speak. Because it's when your colleagues speak that you can then use their thoughts and my thoughts as fodder for your own creativity. That's the purpose of this call, really, is to spark your creativity. Now, if you're listening to this call on a recording, let's say for the first time or even re-listening, please still use it to spark your creativity and to write. So that do the exercises. Don't just listen to the call passively, but give it your undivided attention. Don't drive while you listen to it. Don't do your housework or your laundry or your dishes while you listen to it. Just give it your undivided attention so that you can really use this hour that we spend together to make a big difference in your leadership. Not only your leadership at your work, but your leadership at home, your leadership in your community, maybe your leadership at your church, your leadership in your family, your leadership in your friendship group. With your friends, you can be a leader. In every area, you can be a leader when you want something so much that you're willing to ask others to also want it. This call is part of a training. It's part of a 3-day leadership training that is in October. And you don't have to come to the training, of course, to be part of the call, but I just want to acknowledge that the call by itself is just a start. And if you're interested in the training, it's October 26th, 27th, and 28th. It's in Sonoma, California. Beautiful this time of year. Just gorgeous. The vineyards and it's Sonoma, if you have not been there, it's one of the most attractive, appealing, small tourist towns in the world. This 3-day training is very interactive. It's not a lecture. It's a workshop where you visit with other people and you create your own ideas. The majority of people that have gone through my trainings, they describe them as one of the top 5 most impactful events of their life. So if you like this call, of course come to the next 2, but if you like this call also, I'd like you to consider coming to the training. And if you want to find out more about the training, you can do that by going to DaveEllisLeadership.org. DaveEllisLeadership.org, or you can call Victory Darwin. Victory and I are working together to really present this training in a way that's most beneficial to all of you. I'm going to give you Victory's phone number. It's 877-777-2469. So it's 877-777-2469, extension 3. If you have any questions about that training, please call Victory, or you can email me, Dave, at DaveEllisLeadership.org, and we'd love to have you there. But whether you come there or not, what I want to do now is ask that for the rest of this call, you really focus on you as a leader in every area of your life. So the first exercise that I'd like to do and have you write down is, where are you a leader? So I'm just going to pause a minute, and actually for half a minute, and I'm going to have you write. And again, if you're listening to the recording, please still write. If you're listening live, of course, write, because I want to hear from a few of you. I want you to make a list now of all the places in your life where you are a leader by my definition. Now, again, my definition is that you're a leader if you want something so much that you're willing to ask others to want it. And then you're willing to spend your own time and energy and money to get it. And you're willing to ask others to spend their time and energy and money to get it. So really, you are a leader when you say you are and when you act consistent with that definition. Not because somebody gave you the label. Okay, I'll be quiet now for 30 seconds while you write. What you're writing is a list of all of the places in your life where you're a leader. Please write now. Now, I'd like to hear from a few of you. So this is the time to experiment with this new device called Raise Your Hand Electronically. And what I want to do is I just want to hear a few of the areas that surprised you. So a few of you, please hit *61 on your phone. I'll see it on my computer, and then I'll just call on you. This is really a short sharing. We're just kind of warming up and demonstrating the interactive process of this call. And the process being that I say something like I just have, and then you say something back. So please hit *61 and tell me an area where you are a leader that maybe when you first thought about it, you didn't even realize that you were a leader. Because I think that's often the case. We say, oh, I'm not a leader there because nobody's given me the job. Or I haven't campaigned for the job. I haven't been elected to the job. Say, well, I'm not a leader because, I'm not getting paid. Yeah, I think many of you in your work can take on a leadership role and lead the people that are there to lead you. You can lead the president of your organization. You can lead your supervisor. You can lead your managers. All right, I hear somebody that's not on mute. Somehow the hands didn't go up, but people have been unmuted. So go ahead and say your first name and where you're calling from.
Brooke from San Francisco.
Go ahead, Brooke.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Great. Dave, this is Brooke, and I was attending your last leadership workshop in Sonoma back in June, and I'm just surprised how are you?
I'm good.
Good. I'm just surprised that since then I've been really excited about leadership and have thrown myself into a leadership position in almost every area of my life, and it's pretty thrilling to write the list down on paper and see how much of a leadership role I've taken on.
Wow. Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm really wanting for all of you on this line, all of you on this call, is to take on a leadership role in a way that surprises you, in a way that you didn't even know that you were going to do. Now, I'm going to just make a small technical shift here on our phone, so just a moment. Now, I've muted you all, and so if a couple of you would now do *61, I want to see if that if this system works. We just had a little technical flaw there. I know several of you unmuted yourself. There we go, and now that's working. And Joanne, where have you taken on a leadership role that might have surprised you?
Joanne Bang. And where I was surprised is with my parents' care. I don't live where my parents live, but I see that I'm the primary leader in their care in their retirement. And that was a surprise.
Yeah, and I think that that happens, Joanne, and because you want something so badly that you're willing to ask your parents even to want it, because I know your situation with your parents. I think in some ways you want your parents' health even more than they want it, and you're asking your parents and your sisters and brothers to spend time and energy and money. So the next person, where did you get surprised, or where have you taken on leadership that you didn't realize? Say your name and where you're calling from.
Victory Darwin, Victoria, B.C.
Hi, Victory.
Hello, hello. Okay, so my thing was I started the social network for life coaches, and I was going to help them, market themselves and whatever else, just generally drive traffic there so they could get clients. And I thought this was a great idea because, as kind of a legacy project. If they help 10 people and I help 10 coaches, I've helped 100 people. But what I didn't see was the leadership aspect, because I just thought I'd put up a social network, make a site, and it would just all run, and that would be it. And I realized they didn't know marketing, and so I started to teach them marketing, and eventually the conference calls turned into this really kind of tight group of discovering, you know, what is their niche, what should it really be, why are they doing this, and, you know, teaching the marketing, but even a lot more. So I guess I ended up in a leadership role, and it's great. I mean, it's way more rewarding than I would have expected. Not having as much success as I want to have, so that's kind of a bit of a downside. But, you know, as far as the leadership goes, yeah, that's my answer to your question.
Yeah, thanks, Victory. And as you listen to Victory and Joanne and Brooke talk about leadership, please continue to look for yourself about where in your life you have taken on a leadership role. Now, I've got one more question before we move into the strategies of improving relationship. My next question is, in terms of leadership, where might you become a leader? So as Brooke mentioned, after she did the leadership workshop in June, she went back and she took on all these leadership roles she didn't even realize. Now, as you look around your life, I'm going to be quiet for another 30 seconds, and I want you to make another list, not of where you now are a leader, but where might you become a leader? So think of every area. Think of your work. Think of home. Think of your friends. Think of your community. Where might you become a leader? I'll be quiet for 30 seconds while you write. Now, once again, a couple of you, please hit *61 and tell me where you might become a leader. Now, the reason I'd like to have you do that is so that other people can maybe use where you might become a leader and think, oh, I could do that too. So remember, the whole focus of tonight is in improving relationships and leadership. But I want you to start with this, looking at where you are now and where you'll become a leader. So as soon as you hear that the mute's off, just say your name and where you're calling from, and then answer my question.
Dave, Pete Chandonnet from San Francisco.
Hi, Pete.
So a couple more areas for leadership that I see for myself, and that is it's always so amazing. I always get so nervous when I'm about to speak. But politically, especially for this presidential campaign, and really getting inspired to support Barack and his running mate, and starting to do research about, you know, why it is that I'm really excited about him as a leader, and then inspiring people within my community to want to take part in, you know, fundraising endeavors, and also just getting out and encouraging others to vote for this candidate. Among some other things, like getting more involved in the yoga studio that I'm currently involved in, and actually maybe taking on the running of our city space and managing the teachers within that center, in addition to being, you know, a coach and yoga teacher. And then lastly, really getting taking a stand for people's transformation and really owning that.
Thanks, Pete. I mean, so Peter's got a whole list here, and that's what I want you all to make. Now, whatever your political persuasion, Democrat or Republican, some of you have not yet taken a leadership role in politics, and you can. Or you can look to your work. Pete says his work is in yoga, and you can take it and look to see how you can take a role there. Thank you a lot, Pete. Somebody else, where might you take on a leadership role? Say your name and where you're calling from.
Carrie Davis in L.A.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Dave. The first thing that came up for me, it's interesting, where might I become a leader? And I guess I sort of took the whole question, where can I become a better leader? And the first thing that came up for me was in my own personal life. because I feel I am a leader within my home and my larger family. I think Joanne brought up a really good point. I've realized I'm a leader within my extended family. I'm a leader within my community, but I tend to jump in where I'm needed, and so I tend to get lost. My own needs tend to get lost in the shuffle. So taking a better control, taking better leadership in my own life.
Thank you, Terry.
And also just in all aspects of it, the relationship aspect, I know I need to improve to better motivate.
Thanks, Terry.
So kind of came up in terms of improving all of that.
Yeah. And I love that. So all the rest of you on this call, as you listen to Terry, I'm guessing that some of the rest of you might want to take on that new leadership role, which is leading yourself, leading your spiritual, psychological, personal self. And Terry also mentioned in relationships, so that's where I want to go because that's really the focus of this call. It's the focus of an entire day when we spend it together in October, those of you who are going to be there. So I've got 24 practices that I'd like to present on how to improve relationships in leadership. Now, to do this, I'd like to have you not have this be theoretical. What I'd like you to do is to focus on one person in your life where you want to improve the relationship. So please right now write the name of one person or two or three, but at least one. And write their first and last name and put it boldly right at the top of your page. And focus on that person as I present these ideas. Now, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to get to all 24 of these strategies in our time together, but I'm going to get to a lot of them. And to me, what I'm presenting here is not very important compared to my goal, which is to get you to think about how to improve the relationship with that person. So now if you've written down the name of more than one person, circle the one that you want to focus on for the next 40 minutes. And so in our time together, when I present these ideas, please focus on that individual and see what could you do. And now that individual, to me, whether it's a personal relationship or a work relationship, whether it's a friendship or or somebody you don't even know that well, I believe that if you improve your relationship with that person, you'll improve your relationship with everyone. Because I believe that we're habitual animals, that you're habitual, that I'm habitual, that we operate in patterns. And as soon as you fix a relationship with one person, as soon as you improve a relationship with one person, you improve your relationship with everyone. Now, it's not magical. It's because the process is usually the same. The way you interact with one person, as soon as you change that, you begin to change the way you interact with every person. And that's the focus here, is to not improve the other person, but to improve your relationship with relationships. It's to not fix the other person, but to fix your process, the process that you have with the other person. So that's where we're focused. All right, here's the ideas. Now, as you listen to these ideas, please write down what you think you can do to improve your relationship with that person. Please don't write down my idea. You can go back and listen to my idea if you want to hear it again. But I think what's important for you to write is how you're going to use this idea. How you're going to modify the idea. If I give you an idea you don't like in a minute, just turn it around and create a different idea. All right, here they are. The first one, you want to improve your relationship with that person? Start with lots of listening. Now, of course, you've heard this idea before. Almost any book, any magazine article, anybody who's ever talked about improving your relationship will tell you to listen. Well, what I'm asking you to do is not just know that that's a good idea, but to put it into practice. So that you listen so fully and completely that the other person knows that you have opened your heart. So that you listen until you're certain that the other person is done speaking. Now, that means you're going to start with lots of listening, not just a little listening. But you're going to start with so much listening that that other person is just amazed at how much you've received them. Now, often, I think this is the only idea you need. You put this idea into practice, and I claim that your relationships will start to improve so dramatically that you may not even need any of the other 23 ideas I have. So, write down, when could you start to listen to this person? In what ways could you start to listen to this person? And then you listen until they're done. Now, how do you know if they're done? Well, it's not when they take a breath. So when you're listening and somebody takes a slight pause and a breath, don't jump in and start to speak. They're not done yet. Listen until you know that they're done. How do you know? Well, you count to 10, quietly, under your breath. Don't move your lips, distracting. Just in your mind, count to 10. And keep looking at them with that interest in your eyes and that openness in your heart and your body that says, I want more. But after a while, if they stopped and you're pretty sure they've stopped, then ask them, what else? Just like that. Say, well, okay, well, thanks. What else? Or, anything else you'd like to say about that? Or is that complete for you? Or whatever little cues you can send, you're saying, I'm really glad you've told me that. What else? And that's about the only question I recommend you ask. I know a lot of you have been trained to ask a lot of other questions when you listen, but I'm recommending that in the beginning, you not do that. Instead, you just listen. Strategy number two, after you've listened for a while, speak. Send. Now, don't do this until you've listened. Don't do this until you've listened long enough so that if the other person interrupts you as soon as you start to speak, you can say, stop, please don't interrupt me. I've just listened to you for 10 minutes or 15 minutes or an hour and a half or several times over the last 3 days, and I've really absorbed what you have to say, but now I've got something to say. So please listen. In other words, when you start to send, keep the floor. Know what you want to say. You might even take some notes so that you're really clear about your purpose. You're clear of your agenda. And hold the floor. Send. Now, of course, when sending, don't be antagonistic, don't be blaming. That's really, that'll stop their listening, no matter how much you ask them to listen. If you're antagonistic or you're blaming people, or you're attacking, or you're labeling, people will stop to listen, stop listening. Even if they aren't talking, they just won't be able to absorb you. So please speak with affection, with respect. And giving up completely any antagonism. I've got two more ideas, and then I want to hear from you about these ideas and about how you might use them. So I know a couple of you raised your hands a few minutes ago, and I didn't get to you, but I'm going to ask you again to raise your hand and tell me how you might use these ideas. But let me give you two more first. So first one is to start with lots of listening and then to send on purpose. And the third idea is when you're sending, really share the conversation space. In other words, give that other person at least half the time. so that they can speak at least half the time, and then you speak half the time. Now, I know some people, of course, you know them, they never listen, or almost never. So in your relationship with them, it might be 90% you're listening and 10% they're listening. Well, that doesn't work. You might compliment yourself as being a great listener, but in terms of improving a relationship, I don't believe that that works. I think it's important to send. So share the space. And one way to do that, and here's my fourth idea, is to find some symbol and pass it back and forth. I like to call this symbol a truth stick. So that when you have that symbol, whether it be a pen or a penny for your thoughts or a crystal or just any kind of a symbol, when you have that symbol, you're the speaker and you're sending on purpose. You're being very conscious of what you're saying. You're being very aware of what you're wanting to communicate. And then when you're done, you literally hand that symbol to the other person. And that's their token. That's their being aware that it's time to speak their truth. That's why I call it the truth stick. So you pass this stick back and forth so that you share the conversation space. When you got it, you're sending on purpose. And when you don't have it, you're listening fully and completely until the other person's done. Well, there's four ideas out of 24, and now I'm not going to stop after every four, but those are four of my best. So I'd like to hear from you. Please raise your hand. Now, if you've already got your hand raised from before and you don't want me to call on you, then lower it with *61. But otherwise, I'm going to call on you, and I'd like to hear how you might use those ideas. As soon as you hear yourself unmuted, just say your name and where you're calling from and then how you might use the idea. Go ahead. Now let me call on somebody else. As soon as you hear yourself unmuted, just say your name and speak what you wanted to say.
Yes, this is Anna Reem. Hi, Dave. My husband, Jim, and I learned the truth stick strategy in your workshops, and we began just using it with one another. And it was a wonderful, wonderful tool for improving our relationship and our communication. And what has happened without our even realizing it is how it has now gradually gone into other aspects of our life. And we might be with friends where a discussion gets a little heated up, a little passionate about something, and we'll just grab for a fork on the table and say, well, wait, okay, let's take turns on this. And pass it around, and it's so universally embraced as a way to really share the conversation space.
Thanks, Anna. And I really like what you said about when things get heated, because that's part of improving relationships, to really listen fully and to absorb another. It does get heated, and that's the time to pull out the truth stick, to slow down the communication a bit. All right, I'd like to hear from somebody else. Please say your first and last name, where you're calling from. Go ahead. As soon as you hear yourself off of mute, just speak your first and last name.
Dave, hey, it's Faye Fried calling from Mill Valley, California.
Hi, Faye.
Hey. Well, I really loved your first recommendation of just bountiful lots of listening. And, I've often thought I was a good listener and all of that, but I've noticed I definitely interrupt people before they're done. And I'm going to use this recommendation to expand my listening to be as full as your own and really wait those 10 seconds instead of rushing in with my great idea.
Yeah, thanks, Faye. Because, you know, once in a while, of course, we interrupt. But in general, particularly when we're wanting to improve a relationship, that's the time to really pause and listen as fully and completely as we can listen. So, thanks. All right, somebody else. Go
this
ahead.
This is Nancy from Boston.
Yes.
So a relationship I want to improve is with my daughter, who's 12, Leah. And even though I've been a student of listening for a long time, I've realized that I haven't wanted to listen to her when she's sending things I don't like hearing, like why she hasn't done something I've asked her, or how I'm being so unfair, or when she's speaking in a whining voice that just sends me up the roof. And so this is just a discovery for me that I'm going to listen really well when it's really, really hard, as it has been of late with her.
Thank you, Nancy, because I think that that's the time that we can gain the keys to the kingdom of heaven to improve a relationship, is when the other person is upset. And so that's the time to listen even more deeply. And it's the hardest, because most of us, when somebody comes to us and they're sending their upset, we want to stop them. We want to calm them down. We want to stifle their communication because it's difficult to hear. But I ask you all to instead reframe that. Start to realize that when somebody's upset and they're telling you about that, they are giving you the keys to the kingdom of heaven to improve your relationship with them, because they are letting you know what's not working, and then you have a chance to improve it. Well, I know some more of you could make comments about this, but I want to move on here because I've got some more ideas, and as I said, these ideas are really just fodder for your creativity. So as you hear these, please do what Faye just did, which was to expand the idea of where she could do that, or what Nancy talked about, or Ann talked about. When you hear this idea, apply it to the relationship that you listed on the top of your page. My next idea is to enroll your partner in improving the relationship. In other words, after you've listened for a while and you've spoken and you've discovered that things can be improved, then say, hey, let's do it. Let's take on a project. Because this relationship is really important to me, and I want to improve it. So would you be my partner? Can we do a project? And can we get on the same page together? I think a lot of people try and improve a relationship unilaterally. And sometimes that can work, by the way. It really can. You can improve a relationship without the other person's involvement. But if you get their involvement, and if you get them to speak their involvement and their commitment, I think it goes much faster. So once you got that, my next idea is you schedule time for it. Very difficult, I believe, to have a relationship grow and develop without time, without one-on-one time, without group time, without time on the phone, without time face-to-face, without time even in email. Even email is time, but of course not just email, but face-to-face time and ear-to-ear time. Time that's not just devoted to improving the relationship, but time devoted to fun. Even if this is a work relationship, I claim it will improve if you have some time devoted to fun. I recently was in Boston speaking to the editors of a very large publishing company, and after this very big day of hard work, I facilitated their long-range visioning. At the end of the day, we all went to a bowling alley. I'll tell you, I hadn't bowled for years, but was that fun, and I could see the relationships improving while bowling. My next idea is, if you've got some problem in a relationship and you don't like what's going on, you got a complaint, don't speak it as a complaint. Take your complaint and turn it around into a request. So, for example, if you're complaining that they're not listening enough, instead of complaining, ask them to listen more. If your complaint is that you don't spend enough time with them, instead of complaining about it, ask them to spend more time with you. If your complaint is that they're not taking their part of the workload, instead of complaining to them, just ask them to please take their part of the workload. It's so much easier for people to listen to your request than it is for them to listen to your complaint. My next idea is one that I think destroys relationships faster than anything and can build them over time, which is to manage your agreements. Please think again about that person whose name you wrote at the top of the page and see if you're managing your agreements with them. Now, my guess is that if you're having a relationship problem with them, it's likely that either they broke some agreements with you or you broke some agreements with them. Very little destroys a relationship faster than breaking your word, particularly those words that people consider important. And those happen to be most of the words you give them. So most of the agreements, most of the things you tell people you will do, whether it's bringing home milk from the grocery store after work, or getting home from work by 6:30, or getting that report done by Thursday, whatever those agreements that you make, you start to break those, you start to let those go, and your relationship will get destroyed very quickly. What I'm recommending, therefore, is that you manage your agreements. And first of all, that you make a lot of them. Now, I know you may say, well, yeah, if I make a lot of them, then what am I going to do? I'm going to break them and I'm going to destroy the relationship. Well, yeah, but if you don't make any, I don't think the relationship will develop. What I'm recommending is you make a lot of agreements and you make big ones. And you make them thoughtfully. You don't make big ones like just throw them out there. You make them thoughtfully. And then you keep them. Now, of course, that's a whole lot easier said than done, because if you make a lot of them and they're big, then you're bound to be at risk. To me, that's the power of a relationship, is that we are at risk. The wonder of a relationship is that we are at risk. Now, what happens, though, if you make big agreements, you make lots of them, and you notice that you might not be able to keep them? Well, that's what I'm talking about, managing them. As soon as an agreement is at risk, communicate it. Because most of us would way rather know that your agreement is at risk. You know, you say, well, I know I said I'd do it, but I might not get it done. I just want you to know I'm still going for it. I'm not rescinding it. I'm not even renegotiating it. I'm just reporting it's at risk. Now, sometimes, though, it's at risk or not, and you want to renegotiate it. So renegotiating it is when you go to somebody and say, you know, I made an agreement. I said I'd do this by then, and I want to see if I can change it. Now, that's not the same as rescinding it, by the way. A lot of times people kind of camouflage renegotiation with rescinding. Now, rescinding is when you just go to somebody and say, hey, I know I said I would, but I'm not going to. Now, some of you say, well, that's terrible. No, that's not terrible. That's honest. That's honest, and it builds relationship. You say, look, I know I said I'd do it, and I said I'd do it by the 12th, and I'm not going to be able to do it. So I just want you to know it. See, that's way more effective, way more relationship building than just breaking it. Breaking it is when you just don't do it. They depended upon it. They thought you were going to do it. You didn't do it. Now, though, look, you're human, I'm human, I've broken an agreement. Probably every day I break agreements. I'm sure I break agreements every day. Some of them are small, some of them are large. Actually, I'm not sure it matters much because my relationships develop to the degree that I keep them, the big ones and the small ones. But I break them, and here's what I recommend when you break it. If you go to someone, that person on your page there that you listed, and you say, oh, I realize that I broke my agreement. Just want you to know I apologize, and then I recommit. if you do recommit, or you apologize and say, well, and I'm no longer committed. Because, you know, it's either over, or, you know, maybe your agreement was to meet them every Sunday at 5, and you didn't get there on Sunday, so then you can just apologize and say, I'm recommitted next Sunday at 5. Or you can say, I'm sorry I didn't make it Sunday at 5, and I'm actually not going to make it next Sunday at 5 either, or the next one or the next one. That's rescinding it. I recommend also that when you apologize, you do it without a bunch of excuses, because the excuses imply somehow that you didn't break it. I know I didn't keep my word, but let me give you a whole bunch of really good excuses, because when you find out all the good excuses, it'll make you feel like I really did keep my word. But that nobody buys that anymore, by the way. That's so last year. It just doesn't work. So just apologize. If you want to give a little tiny 10-second excuse, go ahead. But mostly don't go on and on and on about why you didn't keep it, because the other person probably just is trying, listening like you're thinking that if you got a good enough excuse, you're actually a man of your word. Like you actually kept it. I mean, you didn't keep it, but you had a good excuse, so what the heck? Well, now I know that was a lot. I just presented about an hour-long idea in just a couple of minutes, and I'd like to hear a couple of you respond to that. And here's my quick recap, which is to manage your agreements. Make lots of them thoughtfully. Make them big. Keep them, but if you can't or if you might not, report it's at risk. Sometimes renegotiate, but only renegotiate if you're willing to keep it. If you're not willing or able to keep it, then report to the person before you break it so that they can then take action. They know you're not going to come through. If you do break it, though, know that you're just human. Don't spend too much time beating yourself up, or you'll quit practicing and you'll quit making agreements. Just go to the person, apologize with very little excuses, and then either recommit to keeping it or rescind it. Now, I'd love to hear from a few of you, so please hit *61 and tell me, does this make sense? Does this fit for you? You apply this in your life. Know that this person who I just unmuted, you raised your hand on my last question, but I just wanted to unmute you to see if you wanted to say anything about this.
Dave, this is Jim Wood.
Hi, Jim.
Yeah, I wanted to combine two things, the management of your agreement and taking a stand. Much to my surprise, when I got back into this a couple of years ago, I found that people make all sorts of commitments. Hey, I'll call you back. And they sort of, a lot of people sort of have the feeling that, well, if you really wanted to get through to them, you'd call them back or something. But they break their commitments. And I found myself kind of lax in this way. But I changed. I finally decided no. And I do this every opportunity I can, as gently as I can, and basically communicate, hey, you know, there's only two options of something. You either keep your word or your commitment, or you renegotiate it. You just don't forget about it. You don't forget the call back, or you don't forget to get the report in. And I found that that's made me feel more clear about, you know, holding the floor, and also at the same time it clears up a lot of things. And if you can do it without any particular judgment, it's helpful too. So that's been a good lesson for me, because I was sliding into that same sort of sloppiness.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. I think we all, if you look, you might notice that you've got that kind of sloppiness that Jim reports that he saw that he had. And yes, making a commitment, making an agreement is like a lot like taking a stand. So if you want that relationship to improve, start keeping your agreements. If you want that relationship to heal, go back and acknowledge that you have not been very skillful at that. I'd like to hear from one more of you. Go ahead and say your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Dave, this is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
I just got an insight when you were talking about the agreements, and the person that I'm thinking of We don't have many, like, really spoken specific agreements among us or between us. And what I'm realizing is that I can get insight into agreements that I want to have with this person by paying attention to the things that bother me about our relationship. And that
will
be a clue as to where we either have an agreement that's too vague, not specific enough, or don't even have an agreement. So I think.
Thank you, Susan. That's great. That's exactly what I'm talking about, too, in terms of turning any complaints into requests. Because, as Susan mentioned, if you start to examine what you're complaining about, in other words, where's the relationship not working very well, and then you start to turn those into agreements, new agreements that you keep, your relationship will really grow. Well, I'm thinking about my commitments and agreements with all of you, and I told you that I had over 20 practices, and I've given you about 10 general ones and about 10 sub-practices, but I want to give you at least 10 more general ones. So here they are. When improving a relationship, go for common ground. Yes, we all can find something where we disagree, but please imagine two circles that overlap. And at times you want to spend focused on where you don't overlap. But start with and at least spend a lot of time in that area where you do overlap. Start the conversation by talking about what you agree about. Right now I know we're in the heat of a political season, and I've talked to a lot of people about politics, and it's so amazing how quickly we just focus on where we disagree. And that's okay to spend some time there, but let's also spend time on where we agree. Which brings me to my next idea, which is to prioritize the relationship over the issues. So if you think about that relationship you have that you want to improve, when you talk to that person, let them know that your relationship with them is more important than the issue you're having, and more important than your disagreement. Back to the political arena, you know, I have friends who are going to vote for somebody different than I'm going to vote for. And I don't want to give up my friendship over that. I mean, the friendship is way more important to me than that. Now, I realize for a few of you real diehard political people, maybe the relationship isn't more important, in which case, let people know that. But most of the time in our family, in our work, the relationship is more important than the issue at hand. So communicate that. If things are really tough, though, my next idea and the one I use when wanting to improve a relationship is to get another person involved, a mediator. Now, this mediator might be somebody trained in mediation, but doesn't necessarily have to be. I had some friends years ago who anytime they would fight, they were a married couple, anytime they would fight, they would invite one of their friends over to watch. Now, you might wonder on first blush, who would go? But if you think about it, who wouldn't go? Way better than TV. So they're going to get in, they're going to fight. They know they're going to fight. They call up a friend and say, hey, we're going to fight. You want to come on watch? And most of their friends would say, absolutely. When do I get to do that? And the person, really, that's the only job they would have, is to watch, because this couple knew. Their name was Richard and Karen. I still remember Richard and Karen. Richard and Karen knew that if they had a friend sitting there, they would both communicate more fairly. They would fight more fairly. So whether it's a friend or a coworker or a professional mediator or a counselor or a coach, get somebody else involved. Next is when you're really upset, wait. Wait to communicate. Go, first of all, and vent with somebody else. Get mad about it with somebody else. And then when you've kind of let off a lot of your steam, then go communicate. Now, remember, and I want to tell you what I said at the beginning of this call, which is my ideas are just here to provide fodder for your own creativity. Because some of my ideas you want to turn around and turn them to the opposite. For example, this idea of waiting and communicating when you're not upset, yeah, that may be good in some situations, but in other situations, the exact opposite is better. Because sometimes, let's say your spouse unfaithful. I don't recommend you communicate after you've gone blown off your steam. I recommend you communicate right there, right then, and just let her have it or let him have it. Or let's say your boss insulted you in front of your coworkers. I don't know that you need to wait. I think you can go march into your boss one-on-one and say, I am irritated. That really embarrasses me. Here's a few more ideas. I know you've heard them, but I'm here to remind you about forgiveness. One of the primary tools, essential tools for a great relationship. So is there something that you could forgive that person for, whose name you've written down? If so, write it down. Is there something that you could ask for forgiveness for? Because my next idea is to spend face, and not save face. I know that a lot of times, particularly back in the 20th century, we recommended you save face. I don't think that's a good idea anymore. I want you to spend it. Because I think in a relationship, you can either be right, you can be happy. You can either be righteous, or you can have a great relationship. And when you give up being right, righteous, I think then you spend face. Well, I got a few more ideas before we stop. The next one is to fill yourself up, to really fill yourself up. Take care of yourself. Nurture yourself. Give yourself what you need. Take care of yourself so much that when you go into that relationship, whatever it is, you can be unreasonably generous. Which is my next idea. Give 3 times more than you think is reasonable. Give way more appreciation you've ever given in the past. Give way more attention. Give more time. I think the fastest way to a more effective relationship is to assist the other to be happy. Well, I've got more ideas, and we're about out of time, but my ideas aren't nearly as important as yours, so continue to put this list together. And then go to the person whose name you put on that sheet and ask them to put a list together with you so that together, once you've committed to improving the relationship, you make the kind of list that I've put together. A general list, which then you can put together with specificity. Well, I'm always amazed at how fast an hour goes, and I want to end our time together by once again inviting you to attend our workshop in October. Now, I also want you to, of course, attend the next call in 2 weeks. We're going to talk about motivating yourself and the people around you. And then in 2 weeks after that, we're going to talk about time and task management. So please attend those. Now, if you have any friends or family or coworkers you think might be interested in this telecast, this telecourse, please have them go to DaveEllisLeadership.org, and they can sign up, just a click of a button. And because I'd love to have additional people listen and talk about it. And if they sign up, by the way, it's $30. If they sign up, they'll also get the recording of this call. As I mentioned, if you are interested in coming to the workshop, please call Victory, or you can go directly to DaveEllisLeadership.org and find out more about the October training. You can also register from there. I gave you Victory's phone number, and I'm going to give it to you one more time. It's 877-777. 2469, extension 3. I'm always interested in your opinions about these calls, so please send an email to dave@daveellisleadership.org and let me know how this call worked for you. And thanks for attending. I notice from when I look at my computer screen that about 95% of you stayed on this for the entire call. And I kind of make it up that that's means that it was useful for you. So thanks for that, and we'll talk to you and more of you again in 2 weeks. Good night.